CDs. So that means, you know, that could be anything like long-term bonds, other types of bonds, emerging market investments, international investments. And not all of those things have done badly. Bonds have been up over the last 10 years. And the other thing that makes me say that long-term investing is definitely not dead, and we'll kind of cover this pretty well tonight, is if you look back in history, what you'll find is at the time when people are most likely to think long-term investing is dead, there was a famous Business Week cover in the 70s that said, you know, are equities dead? And that turned out to be a very good time to invest after a very bad time. If you look back in the 30s, for example, you know, during the Great Depression, the market, stock market had a negative return as well. And if you then invested in the next decade, the market was up 140%, so not bad. And so the problem that we've had is the last 10 years before this decade, meaning the 1990s, we had this incredible run of stock returns. It was up over 400%. People forget that, probably, although I think they knew it was a good decade. And now we're having this decade where the market's down again. But if you look back in history, every time you have this really ugly period and people give up on the stock market, that's usually the best, you know, one of the best times to invest. So I think we'll, you know, put plenty of ideas out there tonight that kind of confirm long-term investing isn't dead, that there's a good place for it, and there's reasons why you want to invest for the long term.
Hayden, what do you think about inflation right now? In regard to how that, what the impact of that will be over the course of the long term. At this point, the government's thrown a couple $1 trillion into the mix between the Federal Reserve and fiscal policy.
Right. Well, you know, inflation could be a big problem going forward. You know, as you mentioned, the government has put in many billions, we're now talking trillions at times, of money into the system. And the more money they put in, the more likely inflation goes up in the future. So I think most kind of, quote, experts, you know, will say, hey, you know, there's no risk of inflation right now because demand is slack and, you know, people are down and cutting back on spending, increasing their savings rate. But eventually, as the economy recovers, I do think we're setting up with a potential for inflation that gets a little bit out of control. And really, the big risk is we wind up in a situation of stagflation, where we get inflation with kind of really ugly, you know, levels of growth. So
either that, or we could end up with a situation where we have hyperinflation.
Right.
One or those two things. Either way, we're in kind of trouble, unless this sort of Goldilocks scenario of not too hot and not too cold ends up taking hold, which is what we're all hoping for, I think.
Right. Right.
But in our portfolios, you know, probably not necessarily planning for.
Right. Well, what's your thoughts on the inflation problem? Do you think we're going to get it, or you think it's going to be a non-issue?
I think it's hard to tell. This is a big experiment, throwing $2 trillion into the system at this point, and now we need to see, you know, what the impact of that is going to be. Certainly, we hope that we will have mild inflation or disinflation, and that the market continues to move and the credit markets heal, and we somehow come out of all of this relatively unscathed, and we can pay off this huge burdensome debt that we've been growing. But, you know, the possibility that some pitfalls are ahead of us is certainly right there in front of us.
Right. Well, maybe we'll talk a bit about what people can do to protect themselves against inflation. But before we get into that, one of the things that is a big concern when you get inflation is bonds. And so I was wondering what you think. You know, there's a lot of people that we deal with or that we talk to that say, hey, I'm done with the stock market. You know, I got killed and I don't want anything to do with it anymore. And they're holding all their money in cash or bonds, you know, earning 1% or a little bit more in bonds. And a lot of people think that's kind of the safe thing to do, you know, taking no risk, just owning, in theory, no risk, just owning cash and bonds. So, you know, any thoughts on whether that is really a truly, you know, safe thing to do, and if there are actually better things to do if you're trying to worry about your risk in your portfolio?
And that's a great question. A lot of people really are sitting around here right now in cash, kind of waiting and trying to understand what to do. They've been burned. They don't trust the equity markets any longer. However, My first answer to your question would be, if you want to be absolutely guaranteed to lose money over the next 40 years, you should keep your money in cash and bonds, because inflation and taxes will erode roughly 60% of the value of your dollars over the long course of time if you don't invest in other instruments such as commodities, stocks, things that can grow along with inflation right. over the course of the long haul, or inflation protected securities. And another thing is, most people don't realize this, that if you have a portfolio that's 100% in bonds and cash, and then you added a 20% portfolio of equities to that overall position, you would actually end up decreasing your risk and increasing your return over the long course of time. Now, in a downturn like this, where the markets have been, you know, so far down, you know, 30-40%, people are afraid to invest in equities. But, you know, just in the past 2 months, we've had a 30% run-up. And that's the only way you can outpace inflation over the course of the long haul. You need to quantify your risks. Right. You have to either take the risks that you won't outpace inflation over the course of the long time by being too conservative, or, you know, the bottom line is diversification over the course of the long haul is the right way to design a portfolio.
Right. I don't think people understand when you say it reduces your risk, probably how that's possible. Right. So I think what it comes down to is when you're talking about risk, you're talking about the volatility over time of the portfolio. And I think the numbers you were looking at were over a 40-year period, that's kind of what happens. So, you know, I think what people have to realize is, and this goes back to the diversification discussion, you know, if you only own one thing, that's risky no matter what it is, really, because if you own bonds, you're kind of at risk for inflation picking up. If you only own stocks, well, we saw what happens then last year. But by putting things that don't move together, and that's what diversification is all about, you can get a less risky portfolio by taking moderate amounts of different things, right?
It's really commonsensical. I mean, it's just what your grandmother used to tell you, your mother used to tell you, don't put all your eggs in one basket, really.
Right.
Don't you think?
I mean, right.
And now the question is, you know, how do you define what those baskets are? And that's kind of what we're here for.
Right, right. So, you know, some of the things that we look at in terms of diversifying the portfolio, as I threw out some ideas earlier on, are this idea of, you know, having bonds. Well, obviously, you know, starting with stocks. But within stocks, there's a lot of different things you can invest in. You know, so we have clients that own small cap stocks, international stocks, emerging market stocks. And on the bond side, in addition to kind of just treasury bonds, which, you know, we can talk about this, but I think that's actually one of the riskiest things you can buy, in my view, right now, is to own treasury bonds, which sounds kind of crazy. But what do you think about that? You think treasury bonds are
well, the problem is that they've been bid up because everyone is running away from the equity markets.
Right.
And so at this point now, the question will be, you know, could you be taking on more risk by trying to take on less?
Right. Yeah. So I think the... one of the things we're going to talk about is the risk of inflation. You know, risk of inflation.
When we come back from the break.
So that's something to look forward to, right? So
right.
So when we come back, as I mentioned earlier, you know, one of the big risks we see out there is inflation, and we're going to talk about some of the things that you might be able to do to protect yourself against inflation. And if anybody wants to call in and ask us questions, we're open to that. The number is 888-205-2263. Again, 888-205-2263.
And you're listening to WBNW 1120 AM, Boston's Talk Variety.
This is Gary and Hayden with the On the Money Show. Thank you.
Thank you.
Rollerblading?
Oh, not tonight, sweetie. Maybe another night.
Mom, parents who spend time with their kids in their younger years have a better chance of being close to their kids in those difficult teen years. I'm 12 right now. When I turn 13, I'll become a whole different person. I'll be a roller coaster of emotions. How are you going to deal with that if we're not close?
Get your blades, honey.
Give your family everything. Give them your time. From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Skyrocketing cost of living are forcing mature Americans to take a new look at reverse mortgages. Today, over 300,000 seniors have tapped new monthly income and reduced debt with this program. Maybe you've heard, but just don't understand reverse mortgage yet. Simply, a reverse mortgage is the opposite of traditional mortgage, where the lender pays you to live in your home. Confused? Hi, it's Dean George. I found a great resource in Comfortable Retirement, the free service that's referred over $2 billion in home value to their specialists. They can help see if this government-backed program is right for you. So if you're a mature American over 62 with significant equity in your home or condo, call Comfortable Retirement right now. You'll get their new information kit, DVD, and a free no-obligation consultation. And unlike everybody else, you'll be assigned your own personal reverse mortgage specialist. Go ahead and secure your future with Comfortable Retirement.
Call for your free information kit at 1-800-518-1300. That's 800-518-1300 for your reverse mortgage information kit. 800-518-1300.
You want pain relief that's fast? You want pain relief that's strong? Then you want Advil Liquid Gels. They're faster and stronger on tough pain than Tylenol Rapid Release Gels. Advil Liquid Gels. They rush real liquid relief right to wherever you hurt, so you can forget about your pain and get back to your day. Advil Liquid Gels. Liquid fast. Advil strong.
Brands are trademarks of their respective owners. Use as directed.
I want to talk to you about Ken's Steakhouse for just a minute. For six decades and generations, Ken's has provided the highest quality in food, highest standard in service, and the finest dining atmosphere in all of Metro West, and Boston for that matter. The Hanna family is proud to continue their traditions and level of service to their customers that Ken and Florence Hanna started over 60 years ago. Ken's Steakhouse, Route 9 on the Natick Framingham Line, has been and will always be the flagship restaurant for Metro West. Ken's offers several dining rooms, functions from the small gathering to 150 comfortably. Enjoy soothing piano music in the main dining room. Enjoy live entertainment in the lounge. And of course, Metro West offers no better night out on the town than the monthly comedy cabaret at Ken's Steakhouse. With Ken's long-standing traditions and all-inclusive meals, Ken's is by far the greatest value in family, fine, and casual dining. Your grandparents have dined at Ken's, but I'm here to tell you, Ken's isn't your granddad's restaurant anymore. Ken's, a very famous restaurant.
Hi, this is Hayden and Gary with the On the Money Show. We're back from break, and the theme of the show today is long-term investing dead? And I think we've decided that it's not, and we're going to talk about some of the things related to that. And one of the things is diversification, and that's particularly important when you're talking about inflation. And that's one of the themes we're going to talk about in this next segment. For those who want to call in and talk about it, call 888-205-2263.
Right. That might be how you might be able to protect your portfolio from inflation, since that's sort of a primary worry given what's happening right now in the economy. Actually, we have a caller right now. His name is Larry.
Go ahead, Larry.
Go ahead, Larry.
Hi there. I'm enjoying your show. I had a question. I understand that there's a certain allocation that should be used when investing your ratio of stocks to bonds, and I also understand as you get older you should decrease the stocks, perhaps increase the bond in that ratio. My question is, given the current economic climate, do those rules of thumb still apply, and also given what you just said about inflation,
right?
Should you make adjustments because of the perceived increased inflation?
Right. Well, in general, what I would say is those rules probably still apply. I mean, the thing is, people get way too reactive to what's happened in the last 6 months or last year in terms of their portfolio. And that's, you wind up a lot of times doing the exact wrong thing at the wrong time. You know, like selling stocks a few months ago would have been, you know, pretty disastrous for a person's retirement portfolio. So I think in general, that's probably still a valid way to approach things. And one rule of thumb that people throw out there, and I don't think it's a bad rule of thumb, is that you want your bond exposure to be something similar to your age. So, you know, if you're 50, it would be, let's say 60, you'd have 60% in bonds and 40% in stocks. And as you said, as you get a little bit older, you gradually shift money into the less risky assets like bonds and away from stocks, obviously the riskier asset. But the one caveat I would say in the current environment where, you know, I do think there's a little bit risk, some risk of inflation, and that's what we'll talk a bit about more, is, you know, bonds, especially long-term bonds, would be the thing that would get hit the worst if we did get a big bout of inflation. So it's fine to have, you know, if you're 60, to have 60% roughly in of your portfolio in bonds, but you know, ideally you don't. Maybe you would want to shorten that up to be intermediate or short-term bonds. So, you know, longer-term bonds typically are about 30 years. Intermediate bonds might be more like 10 years or somewhere in that ballpark.
Right. And actually, you need to watch out for the credit rating of those bonds too. You could take on a lot of risk in things that are called bonds, but if they're high-yield bonds, you could actually be taking on more risk than you realize, and those would be bonds in the lowest spectrum of credit quality. So you have to watch out for credit risk as well as the risk of the term of the bond that you're investing in.
Right. Now, there is actually a type of bond that'll actually hold up relatively well in a high inflation environment. And just to clarify, we're not saying that we're going to get this hyperinflation environment, but we just see it as a bit of a risk. And particularly for retirement assets, you know, if you're in retirement, your income's not really going up. And if you get inflation, you really get hurt if your income's not going up and your expenses are going up at a high rate. So one of the things that we've started to put some clients into are investment called Treasury Inflation Protected Securities, which is a mouthful. But essentially the way those work is they hold up in value along with inflation. They'll appreciate in value in line with the consumer price index and the inflation rate. And so if you have some of that in your portfolio, that'll help protect you. And so for some of the bond exposure that we have for our clients, we've started to put clients into those to reduce the risk of inflation. And the beauty of that is there are treasury bonds. And so let's say we get another one of these, you know, big sell-offs where the market's down 30% or something like that. Well, treasuries are going to be the place where people move to for safety. And those bonds will probably, you know, not do that badly compared to, you know, some other investments.
Right. One caveat about the inflation-protected securities is that they throw off imputed income. So if you can, which means that you're earning interest on the bonds, but the interest actually doesn't come to you until the end when the bonds do. But all along, Uncle Sam wants you to pay taxes on the income that you hadn't really received yet. And so it's probably better to have them in a retirement portfolio if you can help it. I mean, if you don't have a retirement portfolio and there's no other place to put them, you certainly could put them in a taxable portfolio.
Right. Imputed income, that'll get our listeners really going.
Yeah, I can see that people are really excited.
Larry, I don't know if that answered your question or if you have any other follow-up questions.
No, that's been great. You guys are very helpful. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, good talking to you, Larry.
Right, bye now.
So again, this is On the Money with Gary and Hayden. If you'd like to call in, the number is 888-205-2263. So going back to our inflation theme for this session, there's other things you can do for inflation. I don't know if you want to maybe throw some other ideas out there or...
Oh, absolutely. Commodities would be one way that you could hedge against inflation. Gold would be a commodity example. Right. Oil. Things that move in the opposite direction very often than the stock market when the market's tanking. Earlier this year, though, we had all of us experienced what was going on with gas prices. And really, the only part of the market that was really running was the energy portion of the market. And then all of a sudden, that even ended up in a correlation of one straight down. So it's not always a protection. Just because it's a non-correlated asset doesn't mean that in the midst of, you know, a huge downturn in the economy that everything can't go correlation to one straight down, in which case really just how much you had in bonds and cash protected you in treasury securities. So, you know, thus getting back to what we were talking about rebalancing, it's incredibly important to make sure that you protected enough of your assets. Market timing is dangerous You know, what we really need to be doing is making sure that not enough of your assets were in the equity markets. The returns that clients earned over the course of the last year was really dictated by how much they had in equities and how much they had in bonds and almost nothing else.
Right, right. Yeah, and one of the problems with market timing that people don't realize is you get, first there's a problem which I mentioned a minute ago, which is people have a tendency to kind of move with their emotions, so which is a bad way to invest. And so if you get a situation where, you know, let's think back to the beginning of this year when the market was getting crushed. People were scared, and a lot of people sold stocks in response to that, and it turned out to be a bad idea. Now, if you set up some kind of structured rebalancing program, then what you get was a situation where as the stock market went down and bonds went up, you'd be selling the thing that did well, meaning bonds, and buying stocks to move back to kind of your target allocation. So going back to this, you know, let's say 60-year-old who has 60% in bonds, 40% in stocks, if stocks went down, the allocation would maybe be down to 30 or 35, and they'd have to buy stocks to get back to that target of 40. And that's the beauty of rebalancing, right?
Have a disciplined strategy. You got to stick to the discipline, though. And a downturn is the worst and hardest thing for you to be able to do over that period of time where the equity markets are falling, so you have to buy stocks. I think stocks are the only thing that you in life that people only like to buy when they're expensive right. and hate to buy when they're cheap.
That's a good point.
It's really something to see, and certainly in a downturn where you're down, you know, 30% or so, no one wants to buy and catch falling knives.
Right. Yeah.
So that's the way that you're forced to buy stocks, when they're cheap and to sell them when they're expensive.
Right. And one of the other problems with rebalancing market timing and trying to jump in and out of the market is it can get expensive, especially if you're not doing it in a retirement portfolio. You know, if you're doing short-term trading, you take realized gains, assuming you even have gains, and you're paying ordinary income tax. It's, you know, you don't get the benefit of the long-term capital gain. So there's a lot of problems with short-term investing. It's expensive. If you're calling your broker and trading, you know, that's another problem because you pay commissions and so on. So you're racking up taxes, trading costs, all kinds of things that Jack Bogle would be unhappy with. You're listening to On the Money with Gary and Hayden.
And when we come back, we'll look forward to talking to you about some more of the pitfalls in front of us, given this kind of market timing.
Hey, sport, how was school today?
Good. I drew a picture.
Oh, yeah? Let me see. Oh, look at this. It's our family.
Yep.
There's you and Samantha.
Uh-huh.
This pretty lady is Mommy.
Uh-huh.
And this big, muscly guy's got to be me.
No, that's Sheldon.
Who's Sheldon?
It's Sammy's boyfriend.
Boyfriend?
But she calls him fiancé.
She calls him Samantha!
Need to get closer to your family? Give your family everything. Give them your time. From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Take the Plymouth Ferry to Provincetown. Cruise in comfort and enjoy your trip across Cape Cod Bay without the hassles of a lengthy ride in Cape traffic. En route, enjoy a narrated tour of historic Plymouth Harbor. Before you know it, you're in Provincetown. Spend the day poking around unique shops and galleries. Enjoy a relaxing lunch in one of P-Town's famous restaurants. Experience Cape Cod's National Seashore. Captain John Boat's large, comfortable vessels feature an enclosed galley with your favorite foods and beverages, including cocktails, and a helpful, friendly crew. So travel to P-Town in style with Captain John Boat's. Reservations call 508-747-2400. That's 508-747-2400. 10 a.m. departures daily from Mayflower 2 State Pier in Plymouth. Returns at 6 p.m. Take the express route to P-Town. Call 508-747-2400.
Now's the time to keep ants out of your house. And each ding you hear is Amdro Ant Block doing just that, killing another ant before it ever gets inside. Just sprinkle Amdro Ant Block around the perimeter of your home and it kills ants outside so they can't come in. Ant after ant, house after house. Ant Block is a bait ants think is food, so they eat it and die, including the queen. Amdro Ant Block, the most effective home perimeter ant bait, even works on carpenter ants. Find out why Ant Block is better at baitisbetter.com.
number one Italian restaurant, number one fine dining, and number one lunch in the area. Those are just a couple of the accolades Bella Costa Restaurant has earned in the Reader's Choice in Metro West newspaper. Bella Costa, a family-owned restaurant since 1986. With quality food, great prices, and unsurpassed hospitality, Bella Costa has earned the best of the best for Italian dining and excellence 6 years running. Bella Costa's warm personal service creates a home-like atmosphere. Bella Costa's chef, owner, and staff use only the freshest ingredients, top quality meats, and fresh seafood delivered daily. Bella Costa can host your function, baby shower, wedding reception, or family gathering in their function room and can custom make your menu from their generous menu offerings. Bella Costa will be sure to attend to your every need and make that function the one you remember. Bella Costa can cater your event wherever you choose. Bella Costa, 147 Cotituit Road, Framingham. That's in the Colonial Shopping Center, where routes 126 and 30 intersects. Bella Costa, easy to find, easy to remember, and always quick to return.
Hi, you're listening to On the Money with Gary and Hayden. If you'd like to call in, the number is 888-205-2263. That's 888-205-2263.
Otherwise, we'll continue to bore you just by generating conversation here on our own. So
talking heads. Anyway, what we're talking about today is the question, is long-term investing dead? And we've pretty much stated our case that we don't think it is. And kind of related to that is this topic of, what's the right asset allocation and what, should you be rebalancing on a regular basis? And so, I think both of us have had some challenges in that regard. And so I think Gary's going to maybe give us a couple of stories in that space.
Yeah, I've just got a couple stories in regard to client situations where I can almost always tell when we're at the height of the market, because clients will be calling me telling me I want to buy technology at the height of the tech bubble or energy at the height of the energy bubble. And the need to sort of chase the hot money is sort of all-encompassing where the market's going. Greed is really, really powerful. And but what you really need to be doing when you're at the top of that cycle is adhering to your discipline and buying bonds. And so as an investment advisor, we're always doing what the client doesn't want us to do, which is we're telling them, while the market's running, it's time to be buying these boring bonds that are earning 5 or 7% while the market's earning 20. And that's the reason for that is because we need to build the portfolio up so that when the market falls, we have a nest egg ready to buy stocks when they're cheap. But it's really hard to get that. And then when the market's falling now, if you had looked back, for instance, I have clients who were complaining over the course of the last 10 years, they had earned nothing. And that's because they were reading in the papers every day that over the last decade, everyone's earned nothing.
Right.
And so, I would pull up the quarterly performance charts. And of course, they had earned something. And the reason they had earned something is because we were busy buying bonds while the market was running. Right. And then trying to buy stocks, although many of them didn't let me, and actually all of them almost didn't let me over the course of the last 3 months until the market started running again.
Right.
Emotion just gets in the way of the portfolio rebalancing strategy. So we're all human. We all know that emotions will get in the way. We're going to do the best we possibly can, even trying to move little bits in and out. Even if you can't do the full amount of rebalancing when you need to, incredibly important to try to stick to your discipline. It's how you get your money back.
Right. There's a whole study called behavioral finance, actually, that looks at these things. And the problem is if what creates a stock price is supply and demand. And so when everybody's feeling wonderful, people are tending to put more and more money into stocks, and that drives prices up. And then when things start to go the other way, you start, getting the opposite effect. And so there's actually a natural tendency, because people are reading the headlines and saying, oh, things are great, let's buy stocks. But usually by then, it's in some ways too late, because stock prices anticipate what's happening in the world. And so if you wait until you're really comfortable and all the news is good, you're probably too late. Anyway, we have a call here. On the phone is Drew. Drew, how can we help you?
Yes, enjoying your show very much, both Gary and Hayden.
Thanks, Drew.
Wanted to ask about, given the current market situation, where you see opportunities in international and also emerging markets, and where you also see areas to avoid, too, what your feeling is.
Well, I'll take a stab at that first. For international, I think international is actually a pretty good place. First of all, everybody should have some exposure there anyway. The world has become very global in nature, and there's tons of companies, some of the best companies in the world outside the U.S., so it's hard to not have any exposure there. Typically, for a client you might have of your equity exposure something like 20 or 30% over there. But I don't think in this market it would be bad to have even more. And the reason I say that is going back to our concern about inflation, that if we do, you know, all this money, all these dollars being poured into the economy, that makes dollars very available. And when dollars are plenty, it makes the dollar less valuable. And if the dollar is less valuable, it means it goes down. If it goes down, you're going to benefit by owning foreign investments. So I think that's one good reason to own international investments. And you asked about emerging markets, and I would say the case there is probably even a little bit better in the sense that, you know, the growth in the emerging markets in terms of their economy is going to be better. Their currencies will probably hold up reasonably well compared to the dollar. And the valuations are still somewhat reasonable, although I have to say, you know, 3 months ago they were a whole lot better because we've had some amazing returns in the emerging markets the last few months. But again, it kind of goes back to this whole issue of diversification, where I think, you know, you want exposure there. You don't want to load up. You don't want to have 50% in emerging markets, because emerging markets is one of the riskiest asset classes you could own, but it's still a good place to have some money, and as good now as I would say under normal circumstances.
Right. And at this point, would you argue that they're reasonably valued, or would you argue that they're still cheap?
I would say probably a little bit cheap, but not like a screaming buy. You know, the valuations are maybe a touch less than developed markets, and that's actually pretty normal. Most of the time, emerging markets trade a little bit of a discount to developed markets or the U.S. because of that risk associated with emerging markets. You know, one of the problems with emerging markets is you tend to have smaller companies, you tend to have more political upheaval, you don't have the same protections in some of these countries as you do in the U.S. There's not as tight restrictions on insider trading, corporate governance, meaning, you know, how you kind of take care of the shareholders' interests. A lot of those things don't exist in some of the emerging markets in particular. So for that reason, I'd say, they look pretty good, but not like a, you know, screaming buy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Drew was asking what he might actually avoid, or the things that you should be avoiding in a portfolio right now.
I
would say just avoid going too fast right now, because the market's had an incredible run-up at this point. Certainly we're not short-term thinkers. But to decide to load up and jump in all in on equities, or even right back to your actual target allocation, let's say you're down 20%, and I wouldn't throw the full 20 in all at once. I'd be going slow, maybe over the course of the next, say, 6 months, for instance, because it's very possible that we could be in the midst of a bear market rally, and that might sap your enthusiasm for investing away for the next 20 years or so.
Right.
So I just move slowly and cautiously back into the market, back to target allocation.
Right. Well, some people have used the term ABT, and I'm somewhat of a subscriber to that, which is anything but treasuries.
Yeah, at this point. Yeah.
The problem is, and not to keep beating on this, but you know, if you own treasuries, let's say you own a treasury bond fund, your yield on that is probably going to be about 3% for a typical treasury bond fund, and close to zero if you're talking about like short-term treasuries or a treasury money market. So you're getting paid very little. And in my view, there's a decent amount of risk there, because not that I think the government's going to default. You're going to get your money back. But one of the worst things to own in a high inflation environment is long-term treasuries. So that's the risk I see. And I know, like we talked about earlier, I don't see us having, you know, high inflation this year, or probably even next year. But eventually, we have to pay the piper for all this money pouring into the market and the government's issuing. And that's one area that makes me nervous is treasury bonds. Mm-hmm. Drew, are you still there?
I am still here. I appreciate your insight very much. You guys are doing a great job. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Drew.
Thanks for that feedback.
How much did you pay him?
It was only $100. It was a cheap. It was worth every penny. Anyway, going back to this issue of Treasury bonds. We talked earlier, but I know some people may not be amazing as it sounds. Some people may not be listening for the whole hour. So I just thought I would repeat the fact that, you know, one of the ways to own Treasuries without taking all that inflation risk is this Treasury Inflation Protected Securities, what are also known as TIPS. Those will hold up well in inflation and let you sleep at night because you're going to get your money back.
All right. We've been talking about inflation. But what about deflation?
What about deflation?
Because that's the other possibility that we run into here, is that even in spite of all the money that the government's thrown in to try to stop us from going into a deflationary environment. By the way, deflation is terrible for our economy because everything gets cheaper. And if everything's getting cheaper all the time, people wait to buy things because they're less expensive tomorrow than they are today. It effectively stops the economy from moving, from growing, and deflates the economy over the course of, you know, the ensuing years while it happens. It's what happened during the Great Depression. There's a big argument about how we got out of the deflationary spiral. Some say it was World War II that pulled us out. Right. Others believe it was some combination of World War II and you know, some fiscal and economic policies that got us out of there. And so the question would be just the things that would be the worst things to own in an inflationary environment. You know, aren't those the best things to own in a deflationary environment? So long-term treasuries actually are your protection against a deflationary environment. So, you know, in a very, very strange economy like this, where we're kind of, I would argue, more likely to have inflation than deflation, we still have to think about lots of things when we're designing a portfolio.
So I think we can talk about the deflation, risk and what you might do as it relates to that when we come back from break. This is On the Money with Gary and Hayden.
This heavyweight bout is about to begin. What's the champ wearing? Looks like an examination gown. And from the back,
ooh, that's not pretty.
Champ, what's with the get-up?
I've got to take care of my family, so I'm getting those important medical screens.
The fight is over! Champ, you look pretty healthy out there tonight.
But I'm still getting those tests. For a list of tests you need, go to AHRQ.gov. And remember, real men wear gowns.
Go to AHRQ.gov. This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AHRQ, and the Ad Council.
Hello?
Hey, Dave, it's George. How are you doing? I'm calling to ask you a question.
Hey, Margie and I are doing great. We're living at North Hill now and loving it. What's the question?
Sarah and I have been waiting to move to North Hill for some time, but we haven't been able to sell our house. I see your house is still on the market, and yet you've made the move. How did you do that?
Easy. North Hill has something called the Dream Bridge Loan. It provides up to 12 months of interest-free bridge financing. It's a terrific offer. You should call on it.
Interesting. Sarah would be pleased if I told her we could move to North Hill before the house is sold. Thanks for the information.
One other thing, George. North Hill also has a new monthly service fee incentive. Depending on when you come in, you can have your service fee waived 30, 60, and even 90 days. Check that offer out as well.
Thanks, Dave. I'm glad I called you.
To learn more about North Hill's Dream Bridge Loan and Service Fee Incentive Program, call 781-433-6524. 781-433-6524.
Weeds and crabgrass are taking over your lawn. Traditional lawn weed killers control either lawn weeds or crabgrass, but not both. Why do half the job when there's Bayer Advanced All-in-One Lawn Weed and Crabgrass Killer? It kills lawn weeds plus crabgrass without harming your lawn. Just hook to the hose and go. Nothing's faster or easier. And now it's rainproof in 1 hour. Bayer Advanced. Better science, better results. BayerAdvanced.com.
Cubicles, temporary housing for the business world. Corporate America's way of saying close but no cigar, or door, or dignity. These open-air monuments to labor leave you exposed to all the workplace elements, and yet there you sit, every day waiting to upgrade. Well, at Budget Rent-A-Car, we're in the upgrading business. To prove it, we're offering you the big boy upgrade. A single-class upgrade every time you rent a car. It's just one more way Budget is upgrading the entire rental car experience. We call it big boy service without the big boy prices. Too long a motto to hang in a cube, but a good way to make sure that all the services we offer, from e-receipt to fast brake, get you on the road faster and happier. So if you want the big boy upgrade, stick a note on that half a wall you call a workstation and remind yourself to rent like a genius. Show off your business sense and you can get a single class upgrade every time you rent. Just go to budget.com/upgrade. Rent budget and rent like a genius.
Subject to availability. See website for full terms and conditions.
Hi, this is Hayden and Gary, and you're listening to On the Money. In our last segment, we were just talking about the risks of inflation, and then the actual deflation word came up near the end of the segment. And so and it's something else that we need to worry about. You know, what would happen, if we had a deflationary cycle to face, which is, you know, what the government is trying to avoid precipitously right now by flooding money into the economy, because we can fight inflation by raising rates, but we don't know really how to fight deflation other than to inflate our way out of it, which is what they're trying to do so that we don't have it. But if we were to have a deflationary environment, Hayden, why don't you talk a little bit about the things that might perform best during a deflationary environment?
Right. Well, not surprisingly, the things that are going to perform best are the things that will do that have been trashing because of risk of inflation. So really, the best thing to own, and which is why you saw this huge run-up in longer-term treasury bonds, is long-term treasury bonds. And the reason is you get that fixed coupon. Now, one of the comparisons people have made during this economic turmoil we've had and bad recession is a comparison to Japan, which had a bad recession in the 90s, and it lasted a very long time, kind of in and out of recession
Are they out of recession now?
Well, they're back in again with the rest of the world. So, yeah, I mean, Japan has had a really miserable experience, about as bad as you can get in terms of stock market investing. And, what happened there was bond yields, even longer-term bond yields, unlike here now, longer-term bond yields there went below 1%. And that's really the risk. That's kind of why you saw this flight to treasury bonds here, because when you get this deflationary environment, you know, if you can get something that's paying you 3% or 4% guaranteed, which is one of the few things guaranteed in that environment, then people are going to be very happy with that. You know, and it, as rates drop on these long-term bonds to one, if they ever did drop to 1% or that thereabouts, you're actually going to have big gains on your bonds on top of, you know, getting your coupon of 3 or 4%. The prices of those bonds will go way up. So, you know, if you're worried about deflation, then you do want to own treasury bonds. And the longer, right, the better.
Inflation protected securities, too, tend to hold up better than other things during a deflationary environment. So if you're trying to hedge against both possibilities,
right,
you know, TIPS are really a nice thing to own in the portfolio.
Yep.
Last year they were really cheap for a period of time because people weren't expecting inflation. They were expecting deflation.
Right.
And the long-term treasuries were zooming and TIPS were just a screaming buy.
Right. Now, you can lose money on TIPS, especially in that environment where inflation expectations are coming way down, but they did a lot better than any stock market investment. So,
right,
you know, it's a reasonably good hedge. And this whole discussion kind of goes back to, you know, the theme we're talking about diversification, because, you know, as much as we've harped on the risk of inflation and the fact that in that environment you don't want to own treasury bonds, you know, it's probably fine to have a small part of your investment in treasury bonds, or actually the thing I like even better now are investment grade bonds. So in other words, you know, bonds issued by some of the highest rated companies in the world. A lot of them are paying, you know, very good yields in effect of, you know, 5-6 and, you know, for a little bit more risk, but not big risk, 7 or 8% yield. So and in those, that environment, that could be a great return, as long as we don't get, you know, a bad depression or something,
right,
like that.
How do municipal bonds hold up in a deflationary cycle?
I would say they're going to hold up similarly to other types of bonds. You know, you have interest rate risk no matter which bond you have. The shorter, the better. So if you're worried about inflation, you want shorter-term bonds, and I'd say that's still true for short-term municipal bonds as well. And actually, that's an interesting topic as also, because munis still are pretty cheap. During last year, they got really cheap and were a very good investment. And we had a lot of our clients invested in municipal bonds. And yet they're still a pretty good investment because people were worried about whether the states were going to be able to pay off their debt. And there's been very, very few instances where that's happened. So, you know, you can earn, you know, somewhere around 4% federal tax free. That's not bad.
That's not bad at all. And you'd want to have muni bonds in your portfolio if you're in a high marginal income tax bracket, right?
It makes them even more attractive, right?
Because after tax, you get a better yield than you would with maybe some of those corporate bonds that you were just talking about. Mm-hmm. And we have a caller now.
John, you there?
Hey, I'm here, guys. Hey, really good show. I just tuned in, and you've really got my interest piqued here. A question I had for you was, you were talking about diversification of your portfolio. How do you feel real estate might come into play as a part of your portfolio looking long-term?
Real estate is kind of, I would say, kind of bundled with commodities where, you know, it's a real asset. And so, you know, if you're worried about inflation, real estate probably would be a good investment, even though we've kind of had this period where real estate, you know, hasn't been particularly good, obviously. We don't have to explain that to anybody now. The problem with real estate in recent, you know, years has been, you know, that people used excessive leverage to buy it. But I think if you don't, you know, use excessive leverage, I think you're going to do well with real estate going forward, and especially if we do get the inflation that Gary and I have been talking about and worried about.
Yeah, any real asset is going to really outpace during inflationary environment. Certainly real estate would be that. And then another thing about real estate at this point, some of the deep value managers out there, you know, really making a killing on picking up real estate at 40 cents to the dollar right now.
Right.
And it's a wonderful time. You wouldn't think that it is to be putting new money into real estate investments. It's going to power your portfolio for the next 20 years, most likely.
Right. That said, the home builders are still losing big money, and it doesn't seem like they're going to be earning money anytime soon. So, you know, just buying certain real estate-oriented stocks may not get you the result you want. Mm-hmm. But if you're looking to buy real estate for the long term, especially directly. Or, you know, not through specifically stocks, although there's some REITs, real estate investment trusts, that are starting to look a little interesting here as well. So there's different.
I was thinking more along the lines of the actual hard asset itself, because obviously you certainly can buy cheaper than you can construct right now, even though we've had a retraction in the market with your cost of materials and labor. It's still very difficult to build for what you can buy for right now. So would you consider real estate overall as a good hedge against this inevitable inflation?
Well, if we get the inflation, real estate will be a good investment. I'm pretty sure about that. I think it would be. And direct real estate is better in the sense that, you know, you buy it through a fund or something like that. There's expenses associated with that. You're paying the managers and so on. Obviously not everybody's interested in kind of the illiquidity of direct real estate. But, you know, for people who are, you know, looking long term and can have the money invested for a long period of time, I think real estate's a good investment.
I agree.
Right. Well, thanks very much. I appreciate your input on that. And I look forward to hearing you guys again.
All right. Thanks, John.
Thanks, John. Wasn't it Tony Soprano who said they aren't making any more of that?
I think that's a good point. Anyway, this is On the Money with Gary and Hayden. We're talking about whether long-term investing is dead. And I think by now you know that we don't think it's dead. There's lots of things to invest in these days that are very attractive. We just talked about real estate, and we've talked about some other things. So, I think the key that we want to hit home with, which I think a lot of you have heard before, but it's worth repeating, you know, diversifying makes a lot of sense, right? Because it reduces your risk. You know, if you own a bunch of different things, none of them are all going to do well. That's one of the problems we have with sometimes with our clients, is there's a tendency for clients to look at the list of 10 things that they own and say, what'd you put me in that one for?
What's that international small cap stuff? Why is that performing so badly?
Right. So you got to keep in mind that with diversification, you reduce your risk, but you're always going to own some dogs. But the key is you're going to own some good things too. And
it works whether you want it to or not. I think that's that's the problem with diversification.
Right. And I think, you know, even though last year a lot of equity markets, you know, international did worse than the U.S., emerging markets did worse, even last year you saw the benefit of diversification because bonds did well. And, you know, most people have a decent allocation to that. And they held up well.
And for a while, commodities. Commodities were doing fantastic for a period of time up until about July. And then, you know, everything started doing terribly. Right. But energy was holding up. And gold actually moved in an opposite direction of the markets this year. Lots of people are asking, should I have gold in my portfolio? I prefer that you have more diversification than just one asset.
One commodity.
But certainly, you know, gold could be a portion of the portfolio. It's had a terrible, you know, long-term run over the course of time.
Well, gold is insurance. People shouldn't be counting on that for big gains, but it protects them on the downside.
So, of course, with no absolute interest, self-interest at all, two investment managers were here today to tell you that long-term investing is not dead.
Hear, hear. This is On the Money with Gary and Hayden. We look forward to talking to you next week.
Thanks very much for listening.
For the latest financial headlines or to contact the host, go to bostonbusinessradio.com and join us every day at 6 p.m. The views and opinions expressed on this program are those of their respective parties and not those of this show's producers or the station. You're listening to On the Money on WBNW AM 1120 and the Money Matters Network.
I want to talk to you about Kent Steakhouse for just a minute. For six decades and generations, Ken's has provided the highest quality in food, highest standard in service, and the finest dining atmosphere in all of Metro West, in Boston for that matter. The Hanna family is proud to continue their traditions and level of service to their customers that Ken and Florence Hanna started over 60 years ago. Ken's Steakhouse, Route 9 on the Natick-Framingham Line, has been and will always be the flagship restaurant for Metro West. Ken's offers several dining rooms, functions from the small gathering to 150 comfortably. Enjoy soothing piano music in the main dining room. Enjoy live entertainment in the lounge. And of course, Metro West offers no better night out on the town than the monthly comedy cabaret at Ken's Steakhouse. With Ken's long-standing traditions and all-inclusive meals, Ken's is by far the greatest value in family, fine, and casual dining. Your grandparents have dined at Ken's, but I'm here to tell you, Ken's isn't your granddad's restaurant anymore. Ken's, a very famous restaurant.
You're listening to the Money Matters Radio Network, WBNW AM 1120 Concord, Boston, WPLM 1390 Plymouth,